Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Always nice to have you on board for what will be a very interesting and empowering commentary. Today, we're going to learn about how red ginseng suppresses lung cancer metastasis from Gangneung Institute in South Korea. We're also going to get a new study about intermittent fasting promoting anti-anxiety effects, Federal University of Porto Alegre in Brazil. We're going to find out how moderate to vigorous physical activity and less sitting reduce the risk of diabetes in older adults from the University of Oulu in Finland. We're going to learn about the right five-a-day mix, two fruits, three vegetables, for a longer life. That's from Harvard, published in the Circulation Journal, and I think that they're off by 50 to 75%. I'll give you my formula. Clearly, I think someone is not up to date on that. Also today, from the Natural Sciences Foundation in China, mechanisms through which melatonin prevents osteoporosis. And the rhythm of breathing is key to controlling fear and emotional behavior. From Northwestern University. Also, diets high in, well, refined carbohydrates increases heart disease and death. McMaster's University in Ontario. Those are the latest from around the world that can allow you to live a longer and healthier life and to prevent disease. But also today, someone asked me to watch, I was writing a commentary for tomorrow about the organized crime style of manipulation within the corporate business model. That's for tomorrow's show. But I played the Tucker Carlson piece, and I thought, that's interesting. Well, let me respond. So I'm going to respond to Tucker Carlson, and I would appreciate it if people in the audience, someone, anyone, would simply send it to his office. Now, I don't know the size of his staff and how many people screen his mail, but this could really help him. First, it would be good if he were able to see the truth in what I'm sharing, and therefore I'm sending documentation, and then possibly redo his commentary and with a different outcome. So that's where we're going to go with that. You'll see why that's important when I give you the commentary on that. Also today, shouldn't we take a more honest look at how those who virtue signal, including athletes, and especially African-American athletes, before they take a look at how they made their money off of their sponsors, like Nike? And shouldn't we look closer at Jeff Bezos, who pretends to be liberal, but is, in my opinion, fascistic towards others? I'll give you examples. I have a lot of examples to give to show you that the opinion leaders and policymakers that get on interviews and people then say, well, they're famous and they're rich and they're powerful. They're invited to Davos. We're not. So maybe they know something we don't. To the contrary. They're in these isolation chambers where no one who would challenge them is allowed in to offer counterpoint of view. I'll offer that counterpoint of view today. Also, we're going to have some video clips today that I think are informative. For example, Microsoft wants to form a ministry of truth. Microsoft, Bill Gates, telling the truth about anything? Well, that's an interesting clip. Also, we're going to investigate the links between Fauci to the controversial experiments that he funded that many people believe led to the pandemic. What irony if the man who's controlling everything in a misbegotten and misguided way about COVID was the person ultimately responsible for causing COVID. Also, the cancel culture is over. If you make it over, start talking back to the lunacy the immaturity, the brazen anti-intellectualism and anti-humanism of the cancel culture. And the last clip I'm going to play is from Professor Michio Kaku. He's going to reveal how a simple test using marshmallows can predict how successful you can become. It's only 4 minutes. It's an interesting hypothesis. The last time I spoke with Michio Kaku, I'd filmed him several times for documentaries, including Knocking on the Devil's Door. But the last time he and I had a discussion, it was really a debate in Brooklyn at Andrew's apartment. He was having a get-together, and we had this interesting dialogue. He is close to being a skeptic and a reductionist scientist, as I know, but a brilliant man, and who shares a lot of interesting and intriguing ideas. So this will be an interesting takeaway. See what you can gain from this. You could agree or disagree, but I'd like for you, if time permits, I'm not sure it will, you can call in and share your points of view. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. Now, red ginseng, which has long been used as an ingredient in traditional Korean medicine, has recently drawn very positive attention because it is known as a functional food. It's a functional herb in this case, and it creates a lot of health-promoting effects. The composition activities of red ginseng are different depending upon how it's processed. But the latest research shows that the chemicals, the natural occurring functional chemicals in ginseng, and there are two of them, one is called RK1 and RG5, can significantly suppress lung cancer metastasis. That's important. Now, here is where there is a limitation in what is known as basic science, and we should be looking at this from a different perspective, applied science. Now, I was both. I began as a basic scientist, then did a lot of my most important work in applied science. What do I mean? Let's say that no one has done any research on whether or not red ginseng would have a strong inhibitory effect on brain cancer, colorectal cancer, liver cancer. Should we assume that there is no reason to take it for those reasons? Or should we engage in a positive posit and say, if it's been shown to work with lung cancer, one of the most difficult cancers to deal with, and inhibit that metastasis from spreading, why couldn't we try it and see if it also helped us with other cancers? Because you're not going to have 20 different studies from around the world and then confirmation studies from other institutions for 20 different cancers. Just not going to happen. So what we say is, if vitamin C can stop a coronavirus, which it did in the city of Wuhan at a hospital, two separate studies at 24,000 milligrams intravenous, why should we assume that it will not do anything else in the body for any other cancer or virus or bacteria? We shouldn't limit our assumption. If it's good for one part of the body, why isn't it good for other parts? So this is where science has this limitation of absolutism, and that's reductionism. It lacks any sense of quantum healing. So for those in this audience, including someone I just counseled yesterday and put you on a very specific protocol, mind you, this guy has got stage 4 colorectal cancer, stage 4 liver cancer. The treatment he was offered and he rejected was chemotherapy. So I said, did you study the scientific literature to see, are there any studies showing to give you some confidence that if you took their protocols, it would work? Yeah, there's no studies. Well, I knew there was none for end-stage colorectal cancer or end-stage liver cancer, but they will try anything at that point, knowing full well it's not going to work. But one of the protocols he's on now hopefully will start to bring it back. Right now, his odds are 99.9 against recovery and certain death, and 1/10 of 1% if he starts. But I've seen that 1/10 of 1% become more and more and more. And then one day, you end up like some of the people listening around the world from this for this program today. And that's good, because what the doctor said was impossible, now we know it is possible. In fact, I'll give you an example. This is a shout-out to Carol, Maria, Will, Mel, Cadet, and Suzanne. They're part of a power walking group that gets together every day in Port St. Lucie. They call themselves the Gary Power Group. And Carol was diagnosed with a serious condition, and she had many other conditions. And she was given a protocol. She is 62. She now looks 29. That's what people tell her. They're not flattering her. She's lost weight. She's losing more weight. She stabilizes blood sugar. And she has substantially reversed her colon cancer. We'll do this. I'm not going to sit around and fear and feel sorry for myself. I'm going to live another day. As a result, she's lived a lot more days, and there's no reason that she can't reverse this completely. And if you doubt people can do this, ask Eutrice Lead. Her program follows mine on the Progressive Radio Network. Ask her. 6 years ago, when she called me from the recovery room in a hospital where they'd opened up her lungs and closed them back up, grade B, stage 4 terminal cancer, recommending hospice care. And she said, is there anything that can be done? I said, there's a lot that can be done. Don't put your mind on dying. Don't put your mind on pain or fear. Put your mind on joy, happiness, and the love of life, and taking another breath and starting over. And she did. Great sacrifice, lots of determination. I remember the day that she came to me and she says, my feet are bloody. And I said, so? So that'll heal. It's just some, you know, just some thin skin where you're not used to walking. Now you are, and you get blisters, you get calloused, and it'll all heal. But that exercise, listen carefully, everyone, exercise is one of the single most important things you can do if you have cancer. It is enormously important not to sit around, but get up and move. And if you can take hyperbaric oxygen therapy, do so. If you can get intravenous vitamin C, do so. Very important what we can do. But unfortunately, up to this point, hopefully it'll change, mainstream medicine has not tried these as their first line of helping a person. If they did, I believe that they would see an enormous different outcome than what they're seeing using their traditional therapies. So anyhow, that's good news about red ginseng. Who would have thought that one type of product? Now, we already know that Siberian ginseng is good for cancer, but now red ginseng. So that's something important. Also today, intermittent fasting, meaning you take 1 or 2 days a week where you just have liquids. That's, you can have your liquid protein, you can have your smoothies, but no solid food. And then don't eat between the time after an early dinner, let's say 6 o'clock, and mid-morning, so you at least have 12 to 15 hours, because that's the healing time. That's where it promotes anti-aging, lengthens the telomeres. But now a brand new study out of Porto Alegre in Brazil is it helps disrupt anxiety disorders, which are linked to mitochondrial dysfunction and decreased neurotropic support. And since the drugs that are used to target the mitochondria and improve mitochondrial metabolism, the best and most important is intermittent fasting. It's not a drug at all. And so that way, if you have anxiety disorders, intermittent fasting can help you. Also, moderate to vigorous physical activity and less sitting reduce the risk of diabetes. And this in the University of Oulu in Finland. So I keep saying this, the older you are, the more important exercise is that maintains your blood sugar, which will help prevent prediabetes and diabetes, because people can become couch potatoes. It can prevent heart disease. And also, you want your blood flowing. You want your blood highly oxygenated. Green vegetables oxygenate that. Vitamin E, tocotrienols oxygenate it. Coenzyme Q10, magnesium, all important for your blood. And from Harvard Medical School, they're saying that a study of nearly 2 million adults worldwide showed that eating about 5 daily servings of fruits and vegetables, 2 fruits and 3 vegetables, is likely the optimal amount for longer life. And this was published in the American Heart Association Journal of Circulation. This is one of the limitations of having research done in an Ivy League school, removed from the real world, and having people really know what they're talking about. In point of fact, I would never recommend a diet for less than 10 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, and ideally closer to 13. Of course, that's a different universe that I live in, but then again, I get results that no one at Harvard or any other university has ever gotten. And we document it, and it's proven. So I'm glad that they finally found that 5 a day is good. Maybe the average person would only tolerate 5 a day. A lot of teenagers didn't tolerate any vegetables until the absurd rule of Ronald Reagan making tomatoes a vegetable group. It's ketchup byproduct. And ketchup is loaded, commercial ketchup, with the sugar in it and high fructose. So it's not just a not a vegetable, it's dangerous. But a lot of people eat so much food that is processed and fried, deep fried, that in and of itself can cause premature aging. So good for you, Harvard, and good for the journal Circulation to suggest that fruits and vegetables are more important. But anytime you want to come down and see how a different approach to lengthening life. And by the way, we're the only people in the world that have done a study, clinical human study, proving 3 times, we're about to do the 4th, that a different approach in supplementation, they don't use that, and fasting, exercise, stress management, mindset, and diet, including 13 glasses of juice a day, can physically, objectively, provably reverse the aging process and reverse the diseases associated with it. But look, if someone is able to make a step forward, then there's hope that they'll make another step forward. And also, there's a brand new study out from the National Natural Science Foundation, province of China, and it shows that melatonin, tonin, that's the very important nutrient secreted from your pineal gland, so that it helps so many factors, turns off inflammation in the brain, helps your whole body. But they're showing that it can also help with preventing osteoporosis. That's good news. That's the latest in health and healing. We're nearly 20 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, I'm going to give a shout out, a positive one, to Tucker Carlson, in the hope that someone in this audience, because I just don't have the time, I am up to my eyeballs in preparing some very important protocols for the new anti-aging group in April. These are very advanced. I'm talking about so advanced, I'm not even talking about them on the air, because it deals in areas that the average scientist's head would explode if he knew what I was talking about. That can't happen. Yeah, it has happened. Now we're going to just do it in a large group, something that can really reverse the aging process. But only those people who show up will know what it is, because I'm not going to get it out there being speculated by the skeptics who are, in my opinion, really limited by their biases. So if someone can take what I'm sharing in my commentary and share it with Tucker Carlson, the evidence is overwhelming. My hope is he would change from a very biased position to one of a more enlightened position. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. People are listening and different stations are using the program, and thank you for doing that. Last evening, Tucker Carlson set aside time in a commentary to give extreme praise to one of our presidents, Andrew Jackson. Called him a brilliant man and went on to, in effect, say that he was one of the most successful presidents in American history. He was used as a model in his dialogue. And I don't know how much scholarship Tucker personally engages in, whether he gets talking points or information from his producers. But to me, it's personal. Andrew Jackson, by the way, I believe that he gave the wrong birthday, but Andrew Jackson was president from 1829 to 1837. It's not uncommon to see his name appear on lists of the U.S. worst presidents. Unsurprising, therefore, that Donald Trump once wanted to associate himself with Jackson, praising him repeatedly in speeches and tweets and placing Jackson's portrait in the Oval Office. Well, I believe that the evidence is overwhelming that Andrew Jackson should be shown as one of the most unprincipled federal power mongers in the history of American presidents. He was extremely antagonistic towards blacks and Native Americans. He rose to fame because of his brilliance as a general during the War of 1812. That is for sure. But right after the war, and years before becoming president, his mission was to obliterate what was known as the Negro Fort, F-O-R-T. And he believed that because some slaves were aligning with the British and Indian tribes, especially the Creek, the Seminole, and the Choctaw, that they should be gone after. He was responsible for thousands of deaths, not just Native Americans, during his Indian Wars and westward expansion and his Manifest Destiny, but also advocating harsh treatments of slaves on his Nashville plantation. He owned many slaves. His personal records show brutal public whippings of women and slaves who attempted to run away. In fact, he was unique in that he offered $10 for every 100 lashes doled out to a runaway slave. Now, how many lashes can the human skin tolerate, and what is the form of the lash? What is the material used? Because some people would die at 100 lashes, and they would become infected. Didn't matter to him. He started in poverty, but because of embracing the institution of slavery, meaning buying and selling slaves in bulk, he exploited its commercial benefits to gain a strong foothold in the South. He even brought his slaves to the White House with him. His cruelty to Native Americans mimicked those on slaves. His Indian Removal Act forced displacement of 50,000 Native Americans to open up millions of acres to white settlements. Much of his personal wealth increased from real estate stolen from Native American lands. He signed over 70 laws to remove earlier treaties with Native Americans. He was responsible for the Trail of Tears. It is our common language, and that he believed in what would be considered white supremacy. That was his language. He was very class conscious and espoused patronage politics, meaning he was the first to do this. He favored the elite who possessed unearned privileges, but only those elite who sided with him. He was very revengeful against those elites who stood as political opponents or who supported centralized banks that he opposed. At the same time, he postured himself as being for the common man, the poor masses. Also, he was the first president to stock his cabinet with personal friends, supporters, rather than people with strong qualifications. This was his way of cleaning up politics. And he became known as the spoiled system promoter, meaning putting clueless, undereducated people in office who supported him but could do nothing. He was a notorious gambler, used dice, cards, fights, horse racing, etc. So when you take a look at all that in total, you have to ask, well, if someone caused that much pain and suffering, how is it that Tucker Carlson did not understand that? I understand it because of someone in my family. Her married name was Elizabeth Swain, S-W-A-I-N. You could not marry a Native American at that time, in 1823, if she had a Native American name. So she changed her name to Elizabeth Swain to marry John Fortnor. And she lived in North Carolina, where the Cherokee lived. And when the Trail of Tears occurred, some of the Cherokee realized that they were on a march into oblivion or death, and so they escaped. And they made their way to a place called Surrey, North Carolina. And that's where she met John Fortnor, and they were married, and they had a daughter. And my father's father, Noah Knoll, that was, he married her daughter, and she's my great-grandmother, and full-blooded American Cherokee. So when I look back, and I've never told this story, because there was no need to, but unlike Elizabeth Warren and other people who've exploited other cultures for their political or financial or ideological need, or other races, that's also happened. For those of us who actually are descended from those who are Native American, you look at the circumstances, and my younger brother Steve has spent the last 10 years doing an extremely detailed biography of my family tree. My family ended up in Kentucky, North Carolina, Virginia, and West Virginia. Now, what you may not know is all those places connect at the end of the states. So when you draw a circle of how far was it between these four states, it's not very far at all. West Virginia is a very small state, and if you're at the bottom of the state, you're right across from Kentucky, and then the end of Virginia, and then at the top end of North Carolina. So we traced all of our background there and right up through the Shenandoah Valley, where my family, who were Quakers, were farmers, and they helped settle the Shenandoah Valley. That's why I believe at the genetic level and the energy at that genetic level, I have such an affinity for the land. That's why I've chosen my entire adult life to live on a farm or a ranch. And because then you're close to the ground, you're grounded in the spirit of that. So I have studied epigenetics extensively, and I believe that all of us should take some time in our life to try to find out our heritage, to see if anything that we're currently feeling positive or negative about where we're at, what we're doing, is associated with what we may not appreciate could be our genetic lineage and the energy of that genetic energy. So please just pass on the part that I've discussed about that dark side of Andrew Jackson. And if he can praise him as being one of the best presidents, then he is reading the wrong material. Additionally, today my office is sending out a copy of my newest documentary, and it's called Last Call for Tomorrow. My hope is with theaters opening in New York in the next couple of weeks, I'll be able to premiere it as a fundraiser as soon as more than 25% of occupancy can occur in a theater, and then I'll come back and I'll premiere it. I'm sending that, and I'm also sending him 17 articles, all fully documented, showing the legitimacy of global warming and its human footprint, that we're responsible. Unfortunately, because of his historical politics, a lot of the people that have supported him, even advertisers, are part of the problem of the pollution. Now, to his credit, and I appreciate him going after the Koch brothers and going after many of the libertarians, going after some of the Republican senators like Lindsey Graham, etc., that was political suicide. So even though I hold very strong and different views with Tucker Carlson on many issues, where he has, in my opinion, been more objective and fair-minded and more accurate, I support him because he is probably the number one enemy of the deep state right now in the United States. He is the number one place where people who have been completely shunned and tried to be destroyed by the corporate Democrats. I'm not saying liberal because they do not represent any sense of true liberalism. They make a mockery of that, and they don't even know what a progressive is. For years, you've been hearing progressive this and progressive that. I have yet to see a single progressive in any administration. So they don't know what progressives are. Not ideological. They're not political. You're not looking to support a dogma. You're looking for the truth. Whatever the truth is, that's what you're going to share. And that just seems not to align with them. So let's hope that he gets the message. Now we're going to go to a clip. And after this clip, I'm going to... and by the way, before I go there, let's do a shout-out to Jeff Bezos. Why not stop pretending that you're liberal? You're not. And simply accept what you are. You're a major vulture capitalist. And you'll be rewarded. You have been. Richest man in the world. Amazon is listed on the National Council for Occupational Safety's Dirty Dozen list for violating the safety rules of workers' lives and repeatedly having unsafe working conditions, has racked up numerous fines over unsafe conditions and stealing the tips from its drivers. Remember, early Bezos was a senior vice president of a hedge fund. Started Amazon not because he loved books, no indication that he does, but because they could be bought cheap, wholesale, easy to ship, and independent bookstores were going under, which left a wide-open market to capture. Paid lip service to pledging $10 billion to combat global warming, but his massive online empire contributes millions of tons of carbon emissions, including contracting with oil and gas companies and other enormous polluters and threatening workers who engage in climate activism. And since he is worth, no one knows exactly, but you could put it somewhere, his corporation and him personally, about $200 billion. His $10 billion contribution is equivalent to an average net worth of a person under 35 donating $847. In 2018, Amazon's carbon footprint was 44 million tons. That was greater than several European economies and Apple, Google, and Microsoft combined. He threatened to fire workers who sounded alarm about Amazon's hypocrisy on climate issues. Has one of the largest shipping networks in the U.S. that completely relies on non-unionized labor, unlike USPS. He's very cheap when it comes to giving salaries, limiting benefits, drags down wages in the communities where their fulfillment centers are located. Bezos Earth Fund, he funds scientists and activists and NGOs, a similar charade to Gore's climate projects. Has Al Gore done anything for the environment that I can find? No. But boy, he is rich today. I believe his hedge fund is now worth over $22 billion. He opposed mail-in voting for union workers and filed a petition with the National Labor Relations Board to oppose it. The move by Amazon workers in Alabama to unionize is a result of a massive exploitation of its workers. And European Parliament members have called for investigating Bezos and Amazon for its spy operations in European unions. He repeatedly abuses the underpricing to drive out competitors, squeezing third-party sellers, and extracting public subsidies from state governments. That's just one example that people are exploiting the situation. Walmart, Nike, Sony, Warner Music, Google, Spotify. 85% of their black employees hold unskilled jobs. What have any of these organizations done to give these people a living wage? Facebook, General Motors, Goldman Sachs, Target, United Health Group, Verizon, Uber. Similarly, the NFL, the same one that blacklisted Colin Kaepernick for protesting police brutality, and believe it or not, Fox Corporation, which has been the biggest opposition to Black Lives Matter. You can agree or disagree, but nobody seems to be actually helping, but everyone's claiming to help. Everyone's virtue signaling, give us money and give us power and we will do something, and I don't see a damn thing being done to change anything. Yeah. Notably, Walmart and Amazon have systematically worked against blacks and other minorities. Remember when ALEC and the American Legislative Exchange Council and Walmart, almost inseparable, and there were bills of ALEC's Stand Your Ground law, allowed George Zimmerman to murder Trayvon Martin in 2014 without punishment, three strikes and you're out, keep people in prison longer. Truth in Sentencing law, require prisoners to serve a minimum of 85% of their sentence. That's all Walmart, ALEC, and others that support it, over 200 corporations. But then something that really bothers me. Understand the chair of Nike's board, Phil Knight, is fanatically anti-union. Its sweatshops rely on child labor, do not provide any child or medical care, base salaries on quota numbers, no compensation when injured on the job, grossly underpay workers, and they also put 65,000 American shoemakers lost their jobs from Nike outsourcing. Nike was given a score of 57 out of 100 on the Transparency Index in the fashion industry 2019. It was 47 2018. Has not been environmentally friendly, uses very few eco-friendly materials such as organic or recycled, and is not committed to reducing hazardous chemicals from its supply chain. 2018, it was sued for creating a culture of gender discrimination and sexual harassment throughout its management and factories, long history of abuse at its sweatshops. And look at a complete list of the athletes endorsing or advertising Nike products and designs. They're into the hundreds from every country, including many you would not expect, Nigeria, Azerbaijan, Tahiti, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Russia, China, Bosnia, etc. Nike spends $6 billion a year giving it to athletes. They earn $30 billion in return. When Michael Jordan signed in 1984, an orgy of NBA stars followed, largely due to the influence of Spike Lee. Look at Tiger Woods and Roy McIlroy. Two great golfers, that's not in dispute. What I dispute is any athlete accepting money from Nike and then not first asking, how did this money get made? I understand that there are women and women of color being exploited. That's sweatshop labor. As an ethical consideration in my spiritual values, I would not accept that money. Yeah. So when was the last time that LeBron James or any other famous person who's out there virtually shaming others would say, I'm giving back all the money I made because it's made on the sweat and labor of those who are exploited? How about not one? So just remember, I can respect what you do on a football field, basketball, in a track meet at the Olympics, but don't ask me to respect you for the money you take. That has nothing to do with your performance. It has everything to do with who you are on your ethical and spiritual level. And for that, you get a failing grade. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take another break. Be right back. Please stay with us. What are your thoughts about hypocrisy of those who are opinion leaders and policymakers? Everyone has a right to their opinion, and I remember when Wim F. Buckley was debating some remarkable minds, John Kenneth Galbraith Sr. was one, and Gore Vidal, Arthur Miller. He debated a lot of people, and we saw two sides, and then we can make up our mind if any of it made sense. We don't have those debates today. We have very narrowly defined discussions, and that's unfortunate. We need differences of opinion. A person who has some specific views is Professor Michio, M-I-C-H-I-O, Kaku, K-A-K-U. In this four-minute clip, he reveals how a simple test, he believes, can predict how successful you could become, and he's using marshmallows. Let's see what he has to say.
What is this marshmallow test?
Well, when you look at children and you look at all the different theories about what makes successful kids, you realize that almost all the theories are wrong because they haven't been verified. Like, for example, high IQ. You have a lot of high IQ people who become marginal members of society. And so what is the one psychological test that correlates with success in life? And I found out that it's the marshmallow test. You get kids and ask them, do you want a marshmallow now or two marshmallows a few hours from now? And the kids that want the marshmallow now tend to be those that want shortcuts, those that don't want to do the hard work. They want the quick kill. They grab that marshmallow. But the other ones say, now, wait a minute. If I wait 2 hours, I can get two marshmallows. I can hold out. There's a pot of gold waiting for me. They're not going to take the shortcut. And so you say to yourself, well, that's a test for kids. But then you track them decade by decade by decade. And you find that they are more successful. They have a lower divorce rate, higher income, higher status in society, that don't want that simple payoff now, but are going to delay gratification into the future. And so I realized that that's the key to success in life, not just science, but in life. Don't take the shortcuts.
But can it be taught?
Well, part of it is your personality that is formed when you're very young. Okay, let's be very clear about that. But I think that, yes, I think that, for example, it turns out that if you do the same thing with poor children and the same thing with middle-class children, it turns out that poor children will, in general, go for the quick kill because they know that things disappear real fast. If there's money in the house, it's gone in the future. If you can show people that there is a pot of gold out there, that yes, you hold out, you go to college, you learn the discipline, there's a pot of gold out there. You can learn to appreciate that fact. What we have in the brain that is different from animals is we understand time. We understand the future. My grandparents came to California 100 years ago. But imagine, back then, life expectancy was 49 years of age. I mean, you were born, you had kids, and died. Life was a bitch. Now we have an increased lifespan. We have all the luxury goods. Instead of yelling out the window, which is what my grandparents did to communicate, we have the internet. And so when you look at it the long term, decade for decade, you realize the enormous progress that we've made. We constantly daydream, we scheme, we plot. We constantly think about what could be. Now let's do an experiment. Go home tonight and teach your dog the concept of tomorrow. Try it. Teach your dog the concept of tomorrow, the next week, the next year, and you realize you can't. Animals live in the present. And that's what I think intelligence is. Intelligence is being able to map the future, simulate the future. So if you get an experiment, people with low IQ and high IQ, put them in the same room, and you give them the same job, rob a bank. You'll find out that the low IQ people probably do a much better job of robbing a bank, plotting the bank robbery, than high IQ people who get all messed up with legal implications and stuff like that. The point is that you can have some very smart robbers because they see the future. And that's what we humans do that animals cannot. We constantly daydream. We constantly create worlds that don't exist. And to me, that's what intelligence is. Some people ask me, well, what is the meaning of life then? And I say to myself that if somebody gives you from up high the meaning of life, it's too easy. I mean, is that all? My attitude is that it's self-discovery. We have to reinvent ourselves, that we have to recreate ourselves, that the meaning of life is rediscovery.
The things he just said I would agree with and things I would offer a different opinion on. For example, I agree that an animal lives in the moment, but not all animals. Why do you think that polar bears, all bears, that hibernate spend several months bulking up. They know that they're going to be sleeping and there's not going to be food available. So that, and you know, dogs bury bones, to go back to at a later point. Monkeys, and having been around monkeys since I was 20 years old, helping raise the famous chimpanzee that was on the Dave Garraway Today Show, Kokomo Jr., and helping her learn over 160 different signs and words and remarkable intelligence, monkeys hoard food for a later time. So he's not actually accurate there, but also I feel most people can't see the future because they can't stop looking at the past. They look at betrayals, they look at hurts, they look at pains, real or imagined, and our memories change. Positive becomes negative based upon the current circumstances, which alter our perception of the past. So if you're spending all your time looking to support your victimization because your life isn't going well, then you have no future. You don't even have a present. You have to take all these other things into consideration. So it's not about marshmallows. It's not about people, and I thought it was extremely limiting intellectually for him to suggest that people with high IQ would not rob a bank as likely because they'd be looking at the consequences, as if all poor people are not capable of reason, common sense, and innate wisdom. Wow. That's when I said at the beginning of the show, he is, in my opinion, a skeptic. He's a reductionist scientist. They have strengths, but they have a lot of weaknesses. That was just one. No, the meaning of life is not how many marshmallows you save or eat. It's far more complicated. Before we go to another clip that I think you're going to really enjoy, because this clip is going to be about Microwave Forms a Ministry of Truth. Wow. Just going to take a break for a moment because we have something brand new today to share. And I have Dr. Roy Spicer on the line. We're just going to take a few minutes for this. And also your thoughts on unfortunately, what happens when we put false praise into someone like Andrew Jackson and we don't look at the athletes or celebrities who are not living in a normal life. You don't see these superstars living as superstars used to. Athletes used to go right back to their neighborhood in Brooklyn, Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Mickey Mantle. They didn't think themselves anything special, not above other people. Boy, everyone today wants to get away from everyone else who's not like them. What a delusion by which we live. In any case, we have a big delusion, and that is that somehow when we turn on a faucet, that water coming out, when we take a shower, when we go to cook some food, that it's clean. I don't believe that you could find, or really, by my standards, a clean glass of water in the United States. We thought Flint, Michigan, and the lead level, which was very toxic, was bad. Do you know there are over 4,000 communities in the United States who have water as bad or worse than Flint, doing nothing about it? In fact, we are so absent-minded about this or uneducated about it that we just take it all for granted, thinking some water department, some bureau will be putting some chemicals in the water and making it safe. Nothing could be further from the truth. And that's why I've invited Dr. Roy Spicer on to talk about the new Garinol Ultra Ceramic Water Filter. Rather than me telling you what it does, he has collected all the scientific evidence. This is a new, brand new, ultra ceramic water filter in tandem unit will remove greater amounts of chloramine, chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, THMSs, HAASs, numerous heavy metals for high concentration areas, a revolutionary technology that has just been released. And when special toxic contaminants are present in your drinking water, water supply that most people have is contaminated. The ultra ceramic filter will be able to, because of its metal-gon filter, remove a wide variety of these toxic contaminants. And by the way, most of our body, more than bone and muscle and fat, is water. So you need to drink healthy water all day long. The Ultra Ceramic Filter has increased the efficacy in removing bacteria and parasites and chloramine. To accomplish this better filtration, the flow rate is slower to allow more contact time with the carbon and ceramic. This unit is not recommended for areas with high sediment. It reduces parasites, it reduces bacteria, it reduces lead, and gets rid of bad odor and turbidity. But that's all I'm going to say. There's a lot more. It gets rid of 99% of all types of fluoride. And Dr. Roy Spicer got his doctorate in microbiology from Rutgers University. He's a water expert. Roy, tell people what the actual independent scientific studies have shown about the new Garinol Ultra Ceramic Water Filter.
Well, first, hello, Gary. It's nice to be on your show again. Over the last 30 years that I've been studying water, there's been an increasing number of contaminants. Some are very, very toxic. And the current level of water filtration that people are buying is inadequate to deal with these toxic contaminants. For example, the newer disinfection chemical you mentioned, chloramine, is a combination of chlorine and ammonia, and most carbon block filters do not remove it. Plus, they produce toxic byproducts, as you mentioned again, THMs, HAAs. That's a group of over 300 different disinfection byproducts. In order to remove these toxic chemicals, we had to come up with a newer technology. So the technology in the Garinol AIO Ultra Water Filter combines five different filter materials plus a ceramic. And what that does is eliminate this whole range of contaminants. Chloramine is reduced, according to the test results, 99% for 700 gallons of usage. Now, all these tests have been done in accordance at independent labs with the NSF standards 42 and 53, and it was tested for pharmaceuticals for standard 401. Those are the new standards for certifying the effectiveness of a filter and the claims that the filter makes. So chloramine is reduced highly efficiently at up to 3 parts per million, 99%. That's very effective compared to most other filters on the market, that most of them don't remove it. Plus, you have a combination of ceramic, which will reduce parasites, and very few filters can remove parasites. The ceramic in your unit removes them 99.99%. Plus, the ceramic itself has silver incorporated into the ceramic, so bacteria and parasites cannot regrow. And that's very important because a lot of filters on the market that are carbon filters remove the bacteria, but they grow inside of them. There's nothing to stop them from growing. So the ceramic filter in your filter can not only remove the parasites and bacteria, but stop their growth. In addition, the ceramic is cleanable. That's a very unique feature. Most filters are shut down, their flow rate stops after a period of time. And with the ceramic filter, it's cleanable. You can brush it off and restore the flow rate. That's a very important feature. It helps the filters last longer. The other test data on lead, as you mentioned, lead's very high in a lot of areas. Lead removal is up to 150 parts per billion. And you have two filters in there that both remove lead. So your lead level reduction is very high. Hopefully you'll never get to that level, 300 parts per billion. But if it's there, the filter can remove the lead 99%. In addition, there's a whole other range of contaminants, pharmaceuticals. What I'm really impressed with is the fluoride reduction. Very few filters on the market can actually reduce fluoride. The old technology, alumina, activated alumina, is not used anymore. Some companies have used it, but it's not effective. The metal gun filter has been designed to remove all forms of fluoride. So the filter was tested against all forms of fluoride, including hydrofluorosilicic acid, which is a chemical now. It's not the old type of fluoride. Very difficult to remove. You're getting 99% reduction with two filters. And that's outstanding. So that separates the filter from all other filters on the market. It's very compact. The dimensions here are 12 and a half inches. So if it's sitting on your counter, it's only 12 and a half inches in length, 6 inches wide. It has a diverter that attaches to a standard faucet aerator, so you don't need a plumber to install it. It's a full-use filter for drinking, cooking, rinsing, all consumption. So overall, the filter has the capability of reducing a wider range of contaminants. It's cleanable. It doesn't breed bacteria. and it'll give you up to 1,000 gallons of water, which will last most people about up to a year when you have to change the filters.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Roy Spicer. Okay. I want to get to this other video before we end, but we don't have an unlimited number of these. It's normally $350. You're going to save $50. You're going to pay $299, and you're going to call this number because it may seem like a lot. It's not when you consider water's the single most important thing outside of oxygen in your body to keep you healthy and alive. And at least you know when you, and this, you can take this anywhere with you, by the way, that you're getting clean, healthy water. Wow. I shouldn't have to emphasize how important that is. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And order it, or Neil in the Vitamin Closet at 646-926-5430. Again, 877-627-56, 877-627-5065. Now, let's end our show today with a clip about Bill Gates.
Hey, Internet friend. As if social media companies weren't already oppressively censoring the Internet, Bill Gates' Microsoft has decided to form their own Ministry of Truth. Only this ministry is more of an all-seeing eye type of operation. Along with Adobe, Arm, the British Broadcasting Corporation, Intel, and TruePic, Microsoft is putting together a coalition to, quote, develop end-to-end open standard for tracing the origin and evolution of digital content, end quote. In other words, they're developing a process to trace the origin of what they have dubbed over the last few years fake news. Since the 2016 election, disinformation and fake news have been the reason that social media and internet monopolies like Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google have justified censoring the flow of information. Do you remember the guy who allegedly came in and shot a round off in Comet Ping Pong in Washington, D.C.? That was a prominent example of the dangers of fake news that legacy media utilized to manufacture consent of this censorship. But I digress. Microsoft put out this press release on February 22nd. Basically, we already have social media companies doing the most they can to silence what they call disinformation. But Microsoft and company is bringing the technology to the battle. With the title of this press release reading, Technology and Media Entities Join Forces to Create Standards Group Aimed at Building Trust in Online Content. They say they've identified, quote, a critical need to address widespread deception in online content. So they've put together a joint development foundation project established to address the prevalence of disinformation. And they're going to develop some technology and standards for certifying the source and history of this fake news. Essentially, since it's so easy for people to spread dangerous fake news through the internet, through a series of tweets or even a YouTube video, you know, real harmful stuff, they're working to be able to identify the origin of it. Though, curiously, in their press release, it doesn't say what the punishment will be for being identified as the origin of whatever they dub as misinformation. The goal of this coalition is to distribute this technology they're developing to online platforms across the net so that fake news can be stopped in its tracks. These next blurbs are from Reclaim the Net, who did a fantastic job of covering this development soon after it emerged. Former Microsoft CEO Bill Gates has been a big supporter of modern moves to censor more on social media. During an interview at the Wall Street Journal Summit in London, Gates complained that the suggestions for suppressing conspiracy theories and misinformation on big tech platforms are less creative than we need at this point and called for smart solutions. When asked about the role of tech platforms when it comes to dealing with misinformation, Gates lamented what he described as a human weakness for titillating things, such as claims that the coronavirus is man-made or that there's some conspiracy around it. Gates added that social media platforms allow this type of content to spread very quickly. Of course, on this channel, I've repeated maybe a dozen times who exactly Bill Gates is, but maybe you'll find value in me repeating it again. If you watch my previous videos on Bill Gates, we've established that Bill comes from a very affluent family, as he's the great-grandson of the Seattle Federal Reserve on his mother's side. And his father...
Let you know what's coming. So now they're going to have a They're going to have one system that covers everything in the United States, if not the world. And that means that virtually everything you'd be hearing from most of the most progressive and honest journalists, commentators, will be deemed as fake. So all the more reason for us to start or support alternative sites where we can't be censored. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.